Good morning. I'm reading from the Gospel of Matthew today, chapter 17, the first 23 verses. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. Just then, there appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking to Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good that we are here. If you wish, I will put up 3 shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, a bright cloud enveloped them, and a voice came from the cloud and said, "This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell face down to the ground, terrified. But Jesus came and touched them. "Get up," he said, "don't be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus. As they were coming down from the mountain, Jesus instructed them, "Don't tell anyone what you have seen until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." And the disciple asked him, "Why then do the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come first?" And Jesus replied, "To be sure, Elijah comes and will restore all things. But I tell you, Elijah has already come, and they did not recognize him and did to him all the things that they wished. In the same way, the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands." And then the disciples understood that he was talking to them about John the Baptist. When they came to the crowd, a man approached Jesus and knelt before him. "Lord, have mercy on my son," he said. "He has seizures and is suffering greatly. He often falls into the fire or into the water. And I brought him to your disciples, but they could not heal him." "O unbelieving and perverse generation," Jesus replied, "how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy here to me." And Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of the boy, and he was healed from that moment. Then the disciples came to Jesus in private and asked, "Why couldn't we drive it out?" And he replied, "Because you have so little faith. I tell you the truth, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you." When they came to Galilee, he said to them, "The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men, and they will kill him, and on the third day he will be raised to life." And the disciples were filled with grief.
I wonder what the scariest moment in your life is. Often in those scary moments, we look for something solid to get hold of. Maybe you get thrown one way, you grab something. The scariest moment in my life involves my dad. Now, not because he's a particularly scary person. You can see he's just a big teddy bear. But it was when we were sailing. This is his boat that he sold last year, Still Waters. And we were sailing on the summer, as we often do. And the story doesn't only revolve around my father, but also around, I don't know if you can see them, but those 2 grey straps that go down the side of the boat. Now, they don't look like very much, but they're central to this story. You see, we were sailing around a head of land, and I don't know if you know this, but around a head of land, you get different waves clashing together, and you get really big waves. It's called a race, and it's not fun like a normal race might be. Big waves, and it was a storm, so they were not particularly pleasant that day. In fact, I've got a little video that might show you something of what, this isn't our boat, but you can kind of see what it might have looked a bit like. You see how the front of the boat, the bow of the boat, kind of goes all the way into the water at certain points. It was a wet day, it was a miserable day, And actually already that's quite a scary day. You'll be pleased to know I was downstairs of the boat in the nice warm with a cup of tea on the phone to a girl I met at Christian camp while everyone else dealt with that. But then I got called upstairs. What had happened was the anchor had fallen overboard. And if you know what anchors do on a boat, they stop them. When you're moving like that through waves, suddenly the front of the boat stopping and the rest carrying on is not going to be a good way to go. So I passed up my dad a harness and a strap, and he clipped himself onto one of those small grey straps that we saw at the beginning. He put all of his trust, all of his faith in that piece of nylon fabric-y thing and went to the front of the boat where it was going underwater every wave and pulled up the anchor. It was an amazing thing to see. It was terrifying. If anything had happened, if that strap had have snapped, he would have gone overboard and we would have been left with three teenagers and my mum, who none of us were hugely competent sailors. If you are a sailor, hopefully I'm not putting you off getting back on a boat. If you're not a sailor, hopefully I'm not putting you off getting on one for the first time. I know that my grandmother hasn't stepped on a boat because of things like this. It can be quite scary. But because my dad put his faith in that strap, put all of his trust, all of his weight and his life on that, he managed to get the job done. He chose the right thing to fix his faith on. We're going to look at this passage and we're going to see two stories about Jesus. And they tell us something very similar, that it's all about where we fix our faith. Let's look at these two stories, and we're going to see two things. First of all, we're going to see the Son of God revealed as we look at the Transfiguration. Now, we could spend weeks as we look at the passage as it focuses on the Transfiguration. But because we've recently visited it twice, back in Luke's Gospel over Easter and Mark's Gospel with the 11 to 14s, a video that we produced that you can get from the Church Family News that was sent on Friday, we're not going to spend a long time on it here. Today, we're going to focus on the elements in verses 1 to 8 that point toward Jesus' identity as the Son of God. So let's work through those in order. Firstly, right at the beginning, verse 2, he's transfigured before them. He changes, his face shines like the sun, his clothes become the brightest white, as bright as light. It's a glimpse behind the curtain at Jesus' true divine glory. Secondly, he's joined by Moses and Elijah, the figureheads of the Old Testament, of the law and the prophets, respectively, as Jesus comes to fulfill and supersede their ministry. If you have a look at the end of the Transfiguration in verse 6, at the end of it, Jesus is alone. He's the one who's left to be listened to, the one to whom Elijah and Moses pointed. Jesus is the central figure of the Bible. Thirdly, a cloud of God's presence covers them in verse 5. That's a common example of God's presence in the Old Testament. So on this mountainside, God is with them. And then finally, God speaks from the cloud in verse 5 with the clearest of affirmations. This is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him. Doesn't get much clearer than that, does it? It's an undeniable identification. The voice of God saying, this is my Son. Here on this mountain, Jesus' glory and identity as the Son of God are on display for Peter, James, and John. Can you imagine being on that mountainside, seeing that sight, probably through your fingers because it's so bright? Just picture it for a second, that image. That's something that really happened. It really happened so we might have confidence in who Jesus is. That's a glorious privilege for those three disciples who were there. And what a joy for us today that it is recorded so we too might see the Son of God in his glory. Hebrews 12, that we looked at just a short while ago when we were doing online services, describes Jesus as the author and perfecter of our faith. And it calls us to fix our eyes on him. This event, the Transfiguration, shows clearly who Jesus is and why he should be the subject of our faith, why we should fix our eyes on him. He is the glorious Son of God, and we can have confidence in that because of what happened on this mountain. He is worthy of our faith, worthy of forsaking all else for, as we started thinking about last week. And we're in this hugely privileged position that we've seen the full revelation of Christ, something that at this point the disciples hadn't seen, because we know that he dies and rises again, defeating death and defeating sin. At this point in time, the disciples haven't seen that. In fact, the disciples are having their own struggles of faith, as we see in the following story in verses 14 to 20. This is our second point. Jesus, the focus of our faith. Jesus, the focus of our faith. See, Jesus and the three disciples, they're coming back down the mountain, fresh off the back of this awesome vision of the Son of God in his glory. They're probably walking with wonder and awe as they walk. And then they're thrown back into the harsh realities of a fallen world, of demon possession and crowds clamoring. It's a sudden shock to the system. That might be a feeling we're familiar with, maybe when you've gone to a Christian festival or a camp or even church on a Sunday. You've spent some time in God's word. You've spent some time in his presence and with other believers, and you're full of wonder and awe at the glory of God. Then you get home. The kids are screaming. The house is a mess. There's no food in the fridge. The next day at work, someone just drops a pile of papers on your desk. The colleagues and clients are in bad moods. And that joy and that wonder and that awe, it seems suddenly gone. Where did it go? Well, maybe that's how the disciples who didn't go up the mountain were feeling. Whilst Jesus was gone with his inner circle, maybe they were feeling the same way, wrestling with earthly problems without Jesus. Have a look at what's happening in verse 15. A man approaches Jesus asking for mercy for his son, who has life-threatening seizures. They sometimes make him fall into the fire or the water. It's a familiar request. Lord, have mercy. We've seen it a few times in Matthew already, just in the last few weeks even. But there's one key difference here, verse 16. I brought him to your disciples, but they could not heal him. Now that might sound out of place. Some of us may remember that Jesus gave the disciples authority to heal and cast out demons back in chapter 10. And yet here they've been unable to do exactly that. Why? Well, that's exactly what the disciples want to know. They put the question to Jesus at the bottom of the page in verse 19. Why couldn't we drive it out? And have a look at Jesus' response. Verse 20. Because you have so little faith. The disciples failed because of their insufficient faith. That might be a scary thought for us. The disciples had insufficient faith. Wow, what must my faith look like? Yet Jesus goes on to say in the rest of verse 20, truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, then you can say to this mountain, move. And it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. There's a tension here, isn't there? The disciples' small faith was at fault for their failure to heal the son. And yet, faith the size of a tiny, tiny mustard seed can see the impossible achieved. How does that work out? It's difficult to say exactly what Jesus means. These verses have been pondered on and struggled with for a long time. So if we find ourselves struggling with them this morning, that's okay. We'll struggle with it together. It may not be clear what mustard seed faith here is in relation to the disciples' little faith, but it might help to think about what it's not. Two things. Firstly, not tremendous faith, but true faith. Not tremendous faith, but true faith. Imagine for a moment, back on the boat, that you've fallen in the sea. Now that might sound a bit scary. It's not a storm this time. You've just fallen in and it's okay. Three ropes come flying toward you. The first is thin, almost string-like. The second is a good nylon rope that you'd find around a sailing boat. And the third is one of those really big mooring ropes that ferries use. Now, which of those ropes is the strongest? Probably people would say, that bottom one, the really big, thick one. That's the strong one. That's the one we'd want to grab onto because it's sturdy. But what if I told you that those bottom two were attached to nothing and the top one was attached to shore? Suddenly, the size of the rope is a lot less important than to what it's attached to where it's fixed. And that's the same as faith. It's not about how much faith we can muster. It's not about having the biggest, best, most impressive faith. When something doesn't go as we hoped or we prayed, it's not a case of needing more faith. Maybe that's something we've heard in the past. Just have more faith. You haven't got enough faith. But Jesus dismisses that here. He says faith like a mustard seed is enough faith to do the impossible. A teeny, tiny faith is adequate. It's not tremendous, impressive faith, but true faith. No matter how big, a true faith that is focused on the right subject. And that's the second thing, not self-focused, but son-focused. For anyone listening, that's son with an O, if you aren't able to see the screen. Not self-focused, but son-focused. Last time, Jesus used the expression, little faith, you of little faith. It was as he was pulling Peter up from the water when his doubt caused him to sink. Peter was fearful for his life, and that made him doubt Jesus' power. When the focus was on Jesus, he was walking on the water, something impossible. But when his focus turned to himself, he sank. The other times that Jesus uses this expression, little faith, the same is also true. Those with little faith are those who are worried or concerned about themselves and not thinking about God's provision or God's power. Perhaps that's the case here in this story. Maybe the disciples were nervous about healing this boy whilst Jesus was away and therefore doubted the authority that he gave them. Or maybe they were so confident in their abilities, Jesus has given us the authority, let's go, and so they doubted their need for his power. Whatever it was, we can say their faith was not fully fixed on Jesus. And that's what made it a little faith. In contrast, a teeny but true faith focused on Jesus is enough to do the impossible. The question for us today is, where is our faith focused? Our rope of faith, if you will, what's it tied to? What's it fixed to? Is it this Son of God revealed in chapter 17 in his glory, who promises the impossible, who achieves the impossible for us? If it's not, I'd really encourage you to look at this image of Jesus in chapter 17 and look at what he offers. Following Jesus is truly the best thing we can do. But for those of us who would say we trust in Jesus, maybe we're wondering, what does a mustard seed faith look like? What does it look like in my day-to-day life? When the hard times come, what's our first thought? Is it fear, frustration, or is it faith? At the moment, hard times feel all too common as they lock down another area, maybe our own area or somewhere where our families live. Or when our boss says we're going to have to start cutting costs, pay cuts, redundancies are on the table. Is our response to ask, how will I get through this? Or is it to say, I will trust in his provision and purpose? Are we focused on ourselves, or do we trust in him? But it's not just the big moments. We don't deal with lockdowns and job loss or demon possession or moving mountains every day. For many of us, those things might never be even a possibility in our lives. But what are our daily impossibilities? What are the things with every day we go, oh, this is impossible? It's impossible for me to not get angry at the kids when they're playing up like this. My temper is just too short. It's impossible for me when I'm home alone to not give in to my temptations. I'm too weak. It's impossible for me to love those people next door. They're just horrid people. Those things may be impossible for us if we trust solely on our own patience, our own grace, our own strength, our own love. How often in those daily struggles Do we rely on ourselves? And how often do we turn them over to Christ in prayer? How often do we ask for his patience, his grace, his strength, and his love to deal with the small impossibilities? This is freeing news, brothers and sisters. There is nothing that we can't bring to Christ. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It doesn't have to wait for our lives to be collapsing for us to come to him. We can come to him whatever it is and not rely solely on our own strength. If you're like me, you might feel weak and limited a lot of the time. And yet Christ is powerful and limitless. And through faith in him, nothing is impossible. That's what Jesus says at the end of verse 20. Last week, we talked about taking up our cross. And maybe that sounded really hard. We can't do that. How wonderful then is it to be followed, for that to be followed by this glorious confirmation of who Jesus is, the Son of God, and then by a promise that through faith in him, nothing is impossible. That includes walking the way of the cross. No matter how big or how small our faith is, let's fix it to Jesus. Let me pray as we finish. Father God, we thank you for this glorious image of Jesus at the Transfiguration, that his glory was revealed to those disciples and then to us through the recording of it. Help us to fix our faith on him, to look to him as the author and perfecter of our faith. Help us to bring things to him when we feel limited. Help us to rely on his strength and his power. Help us to not be self-focused, but to be focused on your Son. We ask in his name. Amen.